Fair Community Radio. That's KFAI 90.3 FM in Minneapolis and St. Paul. And online at kfai.org. And so are you.
The viewpoints expressed in this program are the opinions of the people expressing them and are not necessarily those of Fresh Air Incorporated, its staff, or its board of directors.
What's up? This is Toolman.
And this is Bear Witness.
And we are the Hallucination.
And you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake, Best Of.
The Hallucination.
Good day to be indigenous. Get up,
stand up. They are going to become more brutal.
Couldn't cut, hit me cut again.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakanja Hade. A kadagi to all my friends and relatives in four directions. You are listening to Native Earth's Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. Hey, we discuss local, national, Native news and events, and as you know, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues. Hey, we have our friend Arvina Martin coming on, our Wisconsin and national Native political consultant, and we always like to catch up with her. A lot going on all over Turtle Island. And I just want to give everyone a quick shout out again. It was just lovely. We still are running into people, and I'm getting emails from people that saw us at the Minnesota State Fair and were able to say hello to me. It means a lot. And again, a big peeny gigi for all you that were at the fair. Fair's still going on. Stop by Native Roots Trading Post and get some swag. I'm wearing something right now, too, that is on there. It's kind of a cool little prism kind of takeoff from Pink Floyd Darkness, and it has a teepee in there instead of a prism. So, yeah, that was like a couple years ago, one of our big sellers there. Hey, I have our producer and co-host, Misko, here, and I know she's working, dancing, and doing a lot of things in the community, and maybe we can stop in and talk a little bit of what she's going to be doing tonight. And also, as you know, the Circle Magazine, she's one of the reporters that and also does our social media. So a lot to talk about here in the first segment with Misko. I just want to just say I'm grateful that she's working here at Native Roots Radio, and welcome her as always to the microphone. Thanks, Misko. How are you doing?
Bonjour, Gakinawea. Hello, everybody. I'm tuning in, or I'm here from the Minneapolis American Indian Center. I had a dance performance today at Wakaigun, which is right next door. It's a house. I believe it's a wet house, but they have Native services. And I kind of want to talk about that today because addiction, you know, affects not only the person who's using it, but it affects their family members. And from there, it just keeps affecting us until it affects the community. And sometimes addiction takes someone away from community and we miss seeing them around. And so to be able to dance there and to see people, and, you know, I moved out to the suburbs now. I'm not a city girl anymore, but I find myself in the city all the time to come be in community because I see so many familiar faces, and it just makes me really happy on the community that we have. I get to see Robert. I ran into him today as well, our pilot. And yeah, so I kind of just want to talk about what it is and how it, you know, helps our community. So just a little bit about Anishinaabe Wakaigun. It's located in Minneapolis, Minnesota, right off of Franklin. They offer supportive housing and addiction treatment specifically designed for Native Americans who struggle with chronic homelessness and substance use disorders. The program is funded by grants and is typically based on individual eligibility and supportive housing. So something I want to just kind of talk about is what is a wet house? It is a form of supportive housing designed for people experiencing chronic alcohol dependence and homelessness who may not be able to maintain abstinence. So traditionally, what sober housing looks like is you get sober, you qualify for housing, and you stay sober to keep your housing. But what houses, what they do is they get housed. The person becomes more safer and more stable within the housing. They build a relationship and they begin to accept support. And sobriety and recovery can happen whenever that person is ready. And so I didn't even know about this. You know, I have a parent that deals with addiction, and I try to support her in ways that I can, and I learn about it. I learn how culture can help. But a lot of times people feel disconnected, like when they drink or do drugs, they feel disconnected because they're ashamed. And I think that's a really big part of it. And so to be able to have somewhere where, you know, you're still working through your addiction, but you're receiving help and you build those connections, I think that is super important. And to be able to go there today and dance and see relatives, and it was just a really good experience. I'm going to open up the conversation pilot, but do you have anything you want to add?
That statement that you said there, I could not say it any better. That was beautiful. And a lot of our relatives have disconnection to who they are and shame of who they are with through addiction. But, you know, these organizations are there to have people open arms. I'm kind of emotional after you gave that report, because I think of a lot of people that are that we know that are going through addiction, and we see the numbers of people passing away all the time to the end. So it's hard to think about sometimes, but when we drive in our community and we see people that are unhoused, and we know that they're good people and they're just in that vicious cycle. You know, I've been in recovery for 43 years, and the people that I know that are in recovery, so they've had the massive addiction, are some of the most brilliant people I've ever met in my life. And in many ways, and a lot of, you know, what's eating them and the things that are bothering them that they use at. And then you get into that cycle of not being able to use, and then you get off it, and then you're not don't feel worthy of it. And there's all these things that go on socially or emotionally. And so we always want to say a big prayer to our community out there, because, you know, we all have people in our lives that are in the throes of addiction right now as we speak. And we see that when we go into Franklin Avenue or any of these camps, we see too big of a Native American, American Indian people that are in these camps. And, you know, I tried to say yesterday, Misko, that, you know, something about wine and spirits, they talk about that. And I think we're such spiritual people, meaning the American Indians people, that we're always seeking these spirits and feeling good about it. And that's how a lot of times addiction starts. Did that make sense?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I mean, that it is what it is. When I grew up, you know, going to treatment with my mom because she was there. And so I learned about all these things. And that's one thing they talk about, is that it is a spirit. It's a spirit. It takes over your body, and you're not yourself when you're in that. And when that spirit consumes your body, again, you're not yourself. And so you have and that's another part of the culture and the connection, is that we have these teachings about it. And so to, you know, say that you have proximity to the culture, and we're always here to bring you back, and, you know, the ways, the teachings, the community, we're always here for you when you're ready to come back. And again, I'm just super grateful that Wakai Gun is here. I think for Native people, sobriety is more than abstinence. For many people, healing can involve reconnecting with family, culture, community, spiritual identity, and purpose.
And just simple things, too, like hearing the drum. Even going to powwows, there's a lot of recovery that can happen during that. I really appreciate you bringing this up and you dancing in community. in talking about this, because it's so important that we talk about this and our allies listen to this, but also our Native relatives are reminded that, you know, ceremony is more than smoke and feathers. It's a community, a gathering, and it's community. And that's what we try to do a little bit here, too, on Native Roots Radio, Misko.
Yep. And I just want to say thank you, everyone, for listening. I hope you learned something. And have a great day. I'll see you next time.
Right on. Hey, this is Native Roots Radio. Thanks again, Misko. Up next, Arvina Martin. Ho-wa.
To our elders who teach us of our creation and our past, so we may preserve Mother Earth for ancestors yet to come, we are the land.
This is dedicated to our relatives before us, thousands of years ago, and to the 150 million who were exterminated across the Western Hemisphere in the first 400 years' time, starting in 1492.
To those who have kept their homelands and to the nations extinct due to mass slaughter, slavery, deportation, and disease unknown to them, and to the ones who are subjected to the same treatment.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot. Hey, welcome back, everyone. This is Native Roots Radio, and I got talking too much here, and I know a reporter here, Misko, has one more thing she wants to bring up before we bring our friend, State Representative Heather Keeler, onto the stage. Go ahead, Misko.
Yep. So tomorrow, September 2nd, there's music in the park. Join us Wednesday, September 2nd from 6 to 8 p.m. at the gazebo on River Street for an unforgettable evening with Keith Sekola and Eric Peterson. Seven-time Native American Music Award winner Keith Sekola blends Anishinaabe roots, blues, rock, and world music to create a sound of his own. Come early. The Cook Chamber of Commerce, there's Farmer's Market, and food vendors will be on site from 4:30 to 7. Food available for purchase. In case of the rain, the event will move to Cook VFW. Again, that's tomorrow, 6 to 8 p.m. at the gazebo on River Street. Hopefully we'll see you tomorrow for some Native music.
Oh, well, and again, we know tonight, too, at the Minnesota State Fair, Keith Sekola, Gary Farmer, and I heard them last night. I was at the fair, and it was unbelievable. Some really good blues happening, and I'll tell you, Gary Farmer is an unbelievable singer, and also he plays the harmonica, and it's unbelievable. So everyone, if you're heading towards fair, which I will be later tonight, please stop by the West End Market to see those guys. It's amazing. So I just wanted to throw that out there. And I think we have our friend, State Representative Heather Keeler. Are you there, Heather? Technology.
All right.
Heather's in the deep
just
north.
Say, oh, and I'm from the deep mid metro, and I'm still having Wi-Fi issues.
Yeah, you're in the deep suburbs.
Yep. These two renowned Indigenous artists, musician, and longtime collaborators joined together to bring contemporary Native blues, rock, and traditional sounds to audiences as Keith Sekola and the Rangers with special guest Gary Farmer at the Minnesota State Fair. Make sure you go and see them. You know, Keith Sekola is local. He has family here in the Twin Cities, so we want to go support, you know, local Native American artists.
Hey, we have our friend Heather Keeler on the radio. Are you there, Heather?
I am.
Hey, so up there in the deep north, it's hard to get some Wi-Fi there, but you're on the air right now via telephone. How's it going?
Yeah, good. Well, I'm up in Red Lake. I think it's super exciting. We just opened the first ever DFL office on a tribal nation. And I think that says a lot about making sure that we bring our, you know, Indigenous communities alongside as we try to build back the DFL trifecta.
Yes, definitely. Definitely. And I know your work does not stop when it comes to when the session's not in. And I've been following you. And I know you're taking some time off, but I've been following you. And you just do not stop. So I appreciate you stopping in here at Native Roots Radio and giving us an update on what you're doing and what's happening up there. And thank you so much for being on.
The number one thing I was able to do was actually find time to rest. I think, Robert, you and I chatted a little bit about this earlier, that, you know, we live in a world that we tell people to take care of their mental health and to, like, really learn how to lean in to use the tools that are there to help us. And I was advocating that so fiercely, but sort of forgetting to take care of myself. So June, July, and August, I did as little as possible, which was still kind of a lot, but really making sure that I was intentional about saying no to things, getting used to sort of setting new boundaries and, you know, not letting the work completely consume all my life while staying involved in the things that really mattered. And so it's been a heavy transition, but it's been needed and have definitely stayed involved in areas that have been important to me.
I had a chance to see you and another state representative really quickly at the Lynx game and Indigenous Peoples Day. So I want to say a good hello again, because I think I might have been rude to you. I was running all over the place that day pretending to be media. So I want to say a big ahoo to you right now.
You were also not pretending to be media. You are media. And, you know, we talked a lot about this in the world where, you know, we just have, things have transitioned a lot in what you can trust and what you can hear and who's speaking the truth. And, you know, you and I have been doing this for a while. And the one thing that's always been real about you is you show up in spaces for people to speak their truth. And so I think you're one of the realest media guys. You're never just out there pretending.
Yeah, I appreciate that so much, Heather. Really, I just want, I guess that was a sideways apology for running around like a maniac, but I appreciate those good words as always. So what do we got going? What that's exciting up at Red Lake. And it's funny too, we're gonna have Bob Blake from Red Lake on too, so he'll be talking about the Solar Bear with the Solar News and Sports. So what else, Heather? Because, geez, we talked to you a lot, like you said, a lot over the years, and we really always appreciate your insight. And I just want to ask, too, about Two Feathers real quick, because I know you have a limited amount of time to be on today.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, kind of been like relaunching this whole retiring from the legislature is a really interesting maneuver. You know, I got elected in 2020, was in the middle of the pandemic, and now I'm 6 years later retiring, and it's really interesting to sort of figure out what you do. And so I've always had Two Feathers, which is a Indigenous-focused educational and motivational keynote speaking that I do. I do workshops. I have worked a lot with education systems, universities, healthcare systems, and community organizations looking to build trusting, real relationships with not only our tribal nations, but also our urban Indian populations. I think people sort of forget that 60 to 65% of enrolled members actually live off of a reservation. And so it matters, you know, that we do a lot of that education in those systems. And so leaning back into that, you know, getting back involved. But, you know, Robert, before I ever got elected, one of the biggest things I really cared about was actually voter access and fighting against voter suppression when it comes to Native people. Because historically, we know, you know, if it's not one thing, it's another. It's that we can't use our tribal IDs. It's that we can't have a PO box. It's that we have to have an expiration date on our ID. Like, it's always been voter suppression or voter fear tactics have always been something that the Indigenous community has like understood and been a part of. And so as I leave the party politics, because I've been really transparent in saying, you know, I served as a DFL member and I'm proud of that. And it's been like an honor of a lifetime. But truthfully, I think the DFL needs to be called up to be a little bit better as a party. I think we need to be more inclusive to rural Minnesota, to Indigenous people, particularly. And so as I off-ramp, I'm really using my voice to sort of allow people the ability to channel some challenges towards a party that they support. And so I am really working hard to call up the DFL to be better when it comes particularly to the rural communities. You know, I think the metro area looks very different when it comes to Democratic politics versus what it looks like out in my neck of the woods and my side of the state. And so working in partnership with an organization called Minnesota Voice, they also work with the Immigrant Defense Network, Land Stewardship Project, that we're actually out doing nonpartisan democracy observation training all across the state to make sure that we know this administration is creating fear by saying, you know, military is going to be on site or police are going to be on site. And there's actually rules around that and, you know, deep rooted rules around the election process. And so I'm just spending some time out in the northern and western part of the state, really just educating people about voter access. And yeah. So that's what I'm up to now. And, you know, Unc, I got to find a job by January. I need some insurance. So, yeah. You know, share any opportunities or whatever's out there. I'm just seeing where the road leads me.
Well, contact Heather Keeler at Two Feathers. And as you know, all these years that Heather's been on, she's a dynamo and she would be good at leading any organization or co-leading any organization out there. So, Heather, again, what's the email and the website to Two Feathers?
Yep. So it's Two Feathers, spelled out T-W-O, twofeathersllc.com, and info@twofeathersllc.com is my email address. But also you can just find me on Facebook or Instagram. And I'm around, you know, people know me, people know where to find me, but would love to just re-engage and get back into educating and calling up communities to be more engaged and just involved in making and building a community they want to thrive and grow in.
Yeah, and I really enjoy what you said, too, because I really feel like if we do have a blue tsunami, which I think we do, I've had no problem over the years protesting Democrats, too, that aren't aligned with my thinking. So I appreciate you bringing that up, Heather.
Yeah, I mean, I say it all the time. There's Democrats in the Epstein files. So let's not just pretend like we're all going to back every Democrat just because they're on the ticket. Like, I think that it's real. You have to earn people's votes and it matters. You know, I know that there's Democrats that adamantly, you know, turn their back and think it's okay to harm Native women. We've seen, you know, candidates and campaigns that have created harm and don't want to fix that. And so I do think that, you know, being a Native person within the Democratic Party is a subset of its own. And we do have to continue to stand up and fight for the things that we really care about. So I'm not afraid to be a thorn in the side, you know, Robert. That's how I got here. and as I leave, I was just on the radio earlier up here in Red Lake Nation. I was like, I kind of feel like I'm on the verge of the rogueness just to kind of say the things that I feel like I've learned. I've learned a lot. Mm-hmm. I've seen the inside. We're making growth. But it's our job to call up our party to be better.
Right on. Hey, thanks, State Representative Heather Keeler. We'll talk to you soon. We'll see you soon. This is Native Roots Radio. We'll be right back after this short break. Ho-wa.
Programming is supported in part by the Minnesota Department of Public Safety. Ask anyone with a DWI if it was worth it. Don't drive impaired. Drive sober. Drive smart.
Oh-ho! This is Dallas Goldtooth, and you're listening to the Native Roots Radio. Hoka, hecha, wecha.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot. Hey, welcome back, everyone. This is Robert Pilot, and we are with our friend Dr. Stately from Native American Community Clinic here in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis. Great to see you, Dr. Stately. Thank you so much for always for coming in and talking to our people in a good way. Thank you so much, Dr. Stately.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you. It's good to be here tonight. How are you doing?
Doing good. Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, 4 days in a row at the fair, and I was a little tired, and I'm going to go back there for a couple hours tonight to check out Gary Farmer and Keith Sokola. So keeping it going here at the state fair.
Nice. Nice. This is a busy time of year for you. Every year, you're like always at the fair. You're like, you're almost a standard, like those cookies, Martha's cookies, practically.
Yeah, definitely. Well, and if you saw the cover of The Circle, I don't know if you saw that. I did. But yeah.
I got a preview of the cover, remember? You gave me, you saw, let me see the preview.
Yeah, it's awesome.
But, I mean, and, it was even better when it was actually completely done. So. And I love the picture of you and Peggy Flanagan holding up her. Did she autograph her little piece underneath where she's sliding down on the bean?
No. The big yellow slide. Yeah, she's sliding into the cookies.
I had her do that.
sliding into the cookies. Yeah. No.
Sliding into the Senate. Sliding into the Senate.
Wow, I like that. I like that a lot. David and Knoyer and I were interviewed at one of your favorite radio stations up the street. We gave you a quick shout out, but I don't know if it'll make the final cut. But one of your biggest fans here. I wore my NPR socks too. I got those in Oregon.
Yeah,
I'll get you a pair.
Did you get yourself a little bag?
No, no, bag. No, no. Oh, I don't support bullies. No, no, no.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. That's what I told them when they tried to give me one.
Whoa. Okay.
Yeah. That. We're talking in code here on Native Roots Radio. Ho-wa.
We are. Code talkers. Did you hear the last code talker passed away? Isn't that sad? That's such sad news.
It's crazy. It is sad. And you know what I have behind me among everything is G.I. Joe, a commemorative code talker in the box here that I had purchased years ago. And it talks, too, by the way, in Ojibwe.
Oh,
it's,
were Ojibwe's code talkers or no?
Or maybe, well, I know Ho-Chunk were, so I'll have to check the language and get back to you.
There you go, yeah.
Yeah.
We don't want to misrepresent.
Yeah. Well, I think...
I know a few Ojibwe's that talk in a different kind of code, like, you know, members of my family. Which I'm always like perplexed. I'm like, what are you saying?
Well, as you know, the years of you've known me, and Misko brought it up with Wendy a couple shows ago, is that Bobby P over here talks in code and they have to decipher. So many guests have to say what Robert meant to ask was, and then decipher what I said, and then answer the question. So, like you over the years have had to be the host and the guest at the same time many times.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun, though. I was okay with that. So.
Well, you still have to decipher what I have to speak, so there's more. Stay tuned. There's more coming.
This is true. I'm starting to read your body language better, though. Yeah. Things like you just spend time with you. I kind of feel like I'm like maybe a couple steps below Wendy. I'm sure she has to do a lot of interpreting too.
Yes. And poor Misko, who's the producer. She was a student of mine 10 years ago. So imagine that, that you being a student and going, this guy's teaching us. What is he saying? What is he saying? Go do videos.
What are we learning?
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
That's awesome. Well, you know, I haven't actually got my copy of The Circle yet, the second issue of the newly redesigned and beautiful Circle magazine. But I'm really excited about it. So I'll find it and I'll consume it probably over the next few days.
Yeah, we'll definitely have copies for you. We'll probably be bringing a few up to the Indian Center, and then I'll save some for you, too, because this is just a special State Fair edition. You can only get at the State Fair. And, of course, all you guys that subscribe to it, you will get it one mailed to you, too. So come on to the State Fair and pick one up. Unless your name's Dr. Stately, we got one for you over here, or two.
Oh, gosh, I feel really special. I feel like, you know, I'm State Fair royalty or something, like, you know. I might demand free entry tomorrow when I go. And I also might want, like, you know, I don't know. Like, you know how they have, like, what are those things called? When, like, the king or the queen arrives, they have, like, a whole procession.
Procession?
Horses and, wagons and the whole thing.
kind of like gatherings at nations, their little parade that they'd always have.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm sorry if I'm like mentally not making a lot of sense tonight. I was like, I just got home. I had a long weekend in the Black Hills over the weekend for a niece's wedding, and it was really beautiful. But also, my partner ended up in the hospital. And you know, I will say this. This is what I'm going to say. So I know Custer, South Dakota, gets a lot of, guff from a lot of Native people, for all the reasons, right? There's lots of reasons, and you know, I remember driving past somebody's home while I was driving him to the hospital, because his oxygen level had dropped really low to like 75, which is really profound. Like, when you don't see those numbers since COVID. But one of the things I was driving past this guy's house, and he said, "Freedom lives here." It was a big, huge, and like covered his whole house, or the side of his barn rather. And I was like, "Oh God, I'm in Trump territory." That was my first thought. Jesus, this is not going to go well. Right. But it was like, we went to this little hospital, Monument Hospital Systems has, a little rural hospital out there in Custer, South Dakota, that did a really amazing job of taking care of my partner. Like, you know, just really took very good care of him. They were very nice people, really lovely, very responsive, you know, just really attentive. And I was really pleased for that, because I was like, you know, I went to boarding school in South Dakota, and I remember, like, you know, all of the things that I experienced when I was younger there, and, you know, I've heard all the things about how, you know, quite a bit of racism, I think, and discrimination in Rapid City, which is the city that's close by to Custer. It's only a half hour away. So I was a little bit anxious about bringing him to, like, this little tiny, you know, rural hospital, but they treated him really well. We had a really good experience, and they, you know, he was discharged within 24 hours. Did a good job of taking care of his. He ended up having like an infection in his lungs.
Oh.
So I tried to recruit the doctor that worked on him, because she was really lovely. She's a really kind person, and she just seemed to work really well with us, and she had a good bedside manner and all those things. I was like, "Hey, I have a couple new places in Minnesota. Have you ever thought of living in Minneapolis?" And she was like, "No, I think I like living in the country." I was like, "Oh, yeah." But it was an exhausting weekend, so I'm a little tired from all that shenanigans, and tired from my travel. So.
Well, we all are too, and especially me. You're one of the few Native Americans that I know that wear long sleeve sweater when it's 90 degrees. I just wanted to say that for all our watchers.
I should be clear. It is like 65 in this office. I'm freezing. I'm like freezing. So I had to go and raid this sweater from somebody else's office, a colleague's office, because I was freezing. It was either this or a blanket. I was going to look for a blanket. So.
And I wish you would have told me, because I have the exact same sweatshirt. We both could have been twins.
Oh, we could have been twinning. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, definitely. On break, you could go find it and, you know.
Yeah, I could, but it's a little warm here in the studio.
you have to, like, you know, be cautious about saying these things on the radio, you know, because lots of people like our swag and they want it. But right. You don't usually just, this is like an employee only one, or like people who are in our,
community
advisory boards. Hello from Australia. I'm going to be in New Zealand in a couple of months, and I was trying to figure out who I could go and visit in Australia.
Andy
sounds like somebody that I could possibly visit with.
Andy, if people don't know this, we have somebody from Facebook listening to the show, and he's from Australia, and his name's Andy, and we'll give him a shout out. Hey, Dr. Stately, we're going to take a quick break here and see if anybody lives in Hawaii that I could go visit. And and maybe talk about the grand opening again and whatever else you'd like to. So. Appreciate
I could hook you up with somebody in Black Hills and Custer.
Oh, right on. Oh, yes, I've been there. I've been there. Hey, this is Native Roots Radio, and we're going to take a quick break. And we'll be right back. Ho-wa. Give it to me, Mr. Stately. Ho-wa. Come on.
Ho-wa.
All right. We'll be right back. Ho-wa.
Listening to Native Roots Radio. I'm Bobby Wilson. Wicca.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakanja Hade. Hey, welcome back, everyone. I am here with our friend, Dr. Stately, a Native American community clinic here in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis, serving our community for such a long time. And I'd like to talk, before we talk about what's happening, and I'm so excited to talk about the clinic and the work that you've done all these years in the clinic and how that's done. Before I do that, Andy posted something else here. So if you come to Sydney, Australia, he'll do a smoking ceremony for you. So there you go, Dr. Stately. I think you got a date.
That's awesome.
Right on. So thank you, Andy. We'll write Andy's name down and send it to you if you're in the area.
Sounds good.
Hey, so sorry to hear about your partner feeling ill. Talking about going back, you know, to the homeland and things like that, I just think of how beautiful it is out there. I mean, when I went to the Wounded Knee ceremonies, anniversaries of mm-hmm. the occupation, and just being able to drive out there and see the beauty that a lot of people don't talk about, you know.
It is so gorgeous out there. Oh my God. I haven't been in the Black Hills since I was probably, well, I want to say we went to the Black Hills like around the right before my sons were born. And if what I remember, so we were at Bear Butte. My partner's aunt was on the hill doing her hambalecha, her visioning. She's a sun dancer. And then we went to the Black Hills, or we were going to go to the Black Hills and visit that day. And then they airlifted the birth mother of our sons to the hospital. She started having her contractions early. Our sons were born about almost 5 and a half, almost 6 weeks early. And so we had to cut our sort of like our time with family in the Black Hills area and at Bear Butte short and rush to the hospital in Sioux Falls to get to be there the morning of that when our boys were born. So that was like the last time I was there. I didn't have a lot of time to spend there. And you know, the last 18, 19 years of my life after returning home to Minnesota, raising my sons here on Dakota land, you know, being around their ceremonies and in our community and their extended family, it was just like my life has looked differently since 20 years ago when I was living on the West Coast. And just being in that space and being back in that area was so incredibly beautiful and so peaceful, and driving through the National Forest and spending time in Black Hills and also in Lake, it was just so incredible. I took a lot of pictures of just the land because I like, you know, those those hills and the structures of them and the beauty of them, and like during the daytime, and especially in the early morning and the nighttime as it's, you know, getting dark, and driving through those hills at night and the moon and all the stars you see, and just, you know, and the big huge deer that I came around a corner and was standing right in the middle of the road. I was like, thank God I had good reflexes. But it's such a beautiful place. And you know, the wedding we went to was my niece's. She was marrying was a formal wedding, meaning she actually got married a year ago, but or earlier in the year legally. But this was a wedding for her family and the extended family. But it was in near Black Elk's Peak, which I hadn't been to yet, ever, and it was such a peaceful, beautiful, just really deeply spiritual experience being there as well. So it was like just a really nice weekend, even with the trauma, or even with the scare with my partner. It was like, you know, I think it felt a little bit like we were, you know, if there was any place else I could have been on the planet at that moment in time, probably, you know, couldn't have been a better place. You know, all the outcomes were good. The wedding was beautiful. My partner was well taken care of, and we were able to come home. So those are all like really, those are answered prayers, you know, in a deeply, yeah, deeply beautiful and spiritual place. So,
yeah, I really appreciate that visualizing that, what you were talking about. That's beautiful. And things are good. And, you know, I'm really too excited about Franklin Avenue in general, but also Native American Community Clinic. I'm really excited about this. I really feel connected in a lot of ways to Franklin Avenue, and especially now.
Yeah, thank you so much. And yeah, we're like a week and 2 days away from opening our new building and are taking possession of the building. We're going to have about, you know, 3 or 4 days where we're maybe a little bit longer, where we're just sort of kind of getting our sea legs under us. Our staff will have some time to sort of navigate the new space and sort of, you know, get accustomed to it and acclimated in it, and, you know, learn where everybody is, because right now everybody's jam packed in this little teeny tiny space of a cracker box that we operate our clinic in. And this is a bigger space, and it's beautiful, and it's so much, a lot of intentionality and a lot of like really deep thought and conversations about, you know, what this building and what this clinic and the housing above it represents. And I think, you know, what we're trying to accomplish in the community, supporting our relatives who need housing, you know, foundational piece of health and well-being is housing. Hard to have stability in your life, like hard to have good health if you also don't have stability, like a foundation, a place you can call home and a strong foundation. One of the most beautiful experiences I had in this project in recent months, I've come to understand from my own lived experience, my own relationship to this project, like being part of the group of leaders that sort of brought the work together and sort of moved the project along, and being in all these conversations with people like yourself, with NPR, who also ask really questions about the project. Why did you do this project? All these things, right? Having these conversations with reporters, but also having conversations in rooms with our partners and people who funded us, and all these really beautiful conversations has sort of like, you know, I had this moment not too long ago, as I'd say probably within the last couple of months, where I realized, like, when I was younger, my mother, who was a single mother raising 7 children pretty much on her own, you know, there was a period of time before she went back to school and got her college, started going back to school at college at the University of Minnesota, and started working, where she was primarily raising her children on AFDC and on welfare. And there were lots of times when we were not able to sort of like live together as a family. Sometimes I was sent to our relatives to live with for a period of time in the summer, or, you know, and there were times when our siblings, we weren't all in the same household, or if we had to, we jump from house to house, we might have to live with a relative. Lots of times we slept on floors and those kinds of things. I remember a period of time where we stayed with my younger sister's father, her biological father, and we stayed with their family up in that lake, and we lived in their cabin, a two-room cabin. Six children trying to sleep on a bed. You know, what I learned in that process is, I remember this all the time, like, you know, you can fit a lot of kids on the bed if you, like, put them sideways, not vertical this way. And that's how we slept. But I think one of the things that really made me realize at some point in time, it kind of just hit me like a ton of bricks at one point. Like, there were moments where my family was unstable in housing. There were moments when my family was a lot like the relatives we're serving now. And I had this, like, deep, deep sort of, like, just this, oh, God, it just hit my heart really hard. And I just sat in it. I think, you know, I went to ceremony that weekend, too. And I just had this moment where I realized, like, what a tremendous gift and what a wonderful opportunity for me to sort of be in this specific place and time, in this position where I'm able to sort of direct resources to this problem, and know that, like, there was a moment in time when other people were doing that for me and for my family. What was the only thing that's really different between me and my lived experience as a child in South Minneapolis, growing up in South Minneapolis, than what my relatives are experiencing now, who are unsheltered, living under bridges and in tents and things like that, is that when I was younger, I had a lot of family around me. I had so much family around me in South Minneapolis. I could, you know, I had a lot of people taking care of me and tending to me and making sure that I was okay, that I was safe. And that's a little bit different now, I think, for a lot of folks. And that's been a shift and a change over the 40 or 50 years since I was a kid. And that makes me sad. And it makes me really try to wonder, like, what things can we work together as a community to sort of kind of create this network of people who take care of each other. And I'm really happy to be part of an organization where that's kind of embedded in our DNA and the way we think is, like, you know, we call these people who come through our front door in our clinic, we call them relatives. We started doing that in 2018. I asked my leadership staff, I said, how do you think things will change if we actually refer to these people as our relatives, which is who they are?
Yeah.
Not patients, but relatives. Like,
right.
What would you do for your grandma? What would you do for your auntie or your nieces or nephews? How would you change the model of your care and the way you approach that work? And I think it's really transformed and changed the way we work as an organization, but it's also deeply, deeply embedded. Like, it's really clear as I watch this thing unfold and as I watch my team and the people who work at NAC, we move towards this work, as hard as it is, we move towards it with love and commitment and compassion and as much grace as we possibly can. And it isn't easy work. It's hard work. It is sometimes really, really hard work. But we bring our best selves and our best gifts to that moment. And it's a really wonderful opportunity to be able to say, we have this big, beautiful, brand new building that we're opening, and it's for you. It's not for us, it's for them, right?
Wow, you're wonderful, really, Dr. Stately. That was so, I just could keep on listening to you. Thank you for those great words. I appreciate you. And thank you always for coming on Native Roots Radio. It means a lot to me and to our listeners.
Bitch.
Right on. Hey, right on. Hey, up next, Wendy Pilot with some updates and all you fans that have been waiting for her, she's coming back on tonight. Ho-wa! We'll be right back. This is Native Roots Radio. See you, Dr. Stately.
Support for KFAI comes from the Neighborhood Development Center, inviting you to rediscover the hidden gems of University Avenue.
Between Lexington Parkway and Rice Street, locally owned restaurants, shops, artists, entrepreneurs, and community spaces reflect the cultures and creativity of the neighborhoods along the corridor.
Hidden Gems highlights businesses throughout the corridor with familiar favorites and places waiting to be discovered.
The Hidden Gems directory is available at ndc-mn.org/gems.
Hi, it's Dr. Evan Adams, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio. Hey, Victor, you better be listening.
In this portion of the show, we'd like to bring awareness to our wolf and bear populations throughout Turtle Island. Say no to the hunts.
Oh! Oh!
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio. Thank you, Misko, for jumping in and howling with us. Hey, I want to introduce my awesome and beautiful wife, Wendy. Wendy's been an animal advocate and star of the show for over 10 years, and you've been an animal advocate forever. I just want to give people a quick shout out. Thank you so much for reaching out to me at the fair and asking about Wendy. That really makes me really happy.
I really appreciate it. It really warms my heart, so I appreciate it. Thanks, everybody. Hey, everybody. My name is Hanajihi Hani. That means cares for them. And I was given that name by my Dega Curtis. Curtis goes by Mashke Hanajingo, which means walks on white clouds. I'm a policy volunteer for Humane World for Animals, and I work on animal issues at the local and state level. And I always like to bring information so people know what's going on about our animal world. And right now, there is a fight over America's wild horses. So I want to bring that up and tell you guys what's happening to our America's wild horses. So there is a growing fight over one of America's West most iconic animals, the wild horse. The Bureau of Land Management, or BLM, oversees hundreds of thousands of wild horses and burros living on federal lands. And under the Trump administration, advocates, that's me, advocate, say the federal government's approach to these animals has shifted dramatically, with longstanding protections being weakened. So that's what the Trump administration does, right? It has protections against animals and species and endangered species. And what the Trump administration is doing, he's weakening all the protections. And a much more aggressive approach to removing the horses from public lands, right? So he's removing the protections for the wild horses. And what that's going to do is aggressively cause more horses to be removed from these lands, right? So I want to make that really clear. The administration and its supporters argue that there are simply too many horses. Well, of course they're going to say that, right?
Too many wolves, too many horses.
I will be kind of, should I be even? I'm going to be kind of even here a little bit, but then I'm going to go back to my advocacy for these animals. The BLM, again, the Bureau of Land Management, says populations in many areas have grown far beyond what the land can sustain, right? Too many horses competing for limited grass, water, the agency argues, can damage fragile ecosystems and ultimately harm the horses themselves. I'm going to disagree. And I'm going to talk about a Native American tribe in California and how that they're trying to protect these horses. But first, I want to just say that the BLM, the contractors, use helicopters, right, to drive entire herds into holding corrals. The horses are separated from their families and removed from the range. Now, these helicopters come down so low and terrorize these horses. Some of the horses trip and fall and break their legs. The horses are left there to die. If you think anybody's coming to help these horses, they're not. They're just left to die. The horses are terrorized. They're separated from their families. They're brought into these holding pens where that are crowded. There's not enough food. It's heat. There's no shade. It's just horrific. Critics say the Trump administration is taking this much further and that weakening protections for wild horses could open the door to removal of enormous numbers of animals. So the protections are leaving, more horses will be rounded up. Yeah, this is really It's really hard. And here's the thing. Here's the other thing is there was an investigation by the New York Times, and it examined the fate of wild horses after they left the Bureau of Land Management system. So the BML says it does not directly send wild horses to slaughter, but the Times investigation documented cases in which horses removed from federal lands and subsequently transferred or sold to private hands ultimately ended up in the slaughter pipeline. This is a New York Times investigation that just happened. This distinction is important. The federal government can say it isn't directly putting wild horses in the truck, right, headed to the slaughterhouse. But critics, me, I'm a critic, argue that if the government removes the horses from protected federal land and then transfers ownership without significant safeguards, it has created a pathway through which that horses can ultimately be slaughtered. And that's what is happening right now. And if the Trump administration succeeds in dramatically increasing the numbers of horses removed from the public lands, animal advocates, that's me, are asking, where are all these horses going to? There is another powerful voice in the fight, Native American tribes. In California, a tribe is challenging the government's approach and seeking to protect wild horses that have cultural and historical significance. For Native communities, this isn't simply a debate about animal management. It is also about cultural heritage, tribal sovereignty, and who gets to decide what happens on lands that have been important to indigenous people for generations.
Amen.
And I'm going to tell you, the government doesn't care about any of that. The tribe's position brings another dimension to the debate. Why shouldn't tribes have a meaningful role in deciding the fate of these animals and the lands where they live? Hello?
Yeah.
Tribal leaders view the wild horses as sacred relatives and vital parts of their living culture, landscape, and not just animals. And also, what impact does this roundup of the horses will have on sacred lands?
Mm-hmm.
The tribe asserts that the population data used to justify removing 624 horses is stale and ignores recent natural die-offs from harsh winter weather. So the BML is using information about the number of horses, I think from 2024, after really bad winters, and there were a lot of horses that already died.
Look what our friend Lori wrote, too. It's horrific. Please write or call your representatives. They lie. Cattle do more damage.
Thank you. That is
the
truth.
Thank you, Lori.
That is the truth. A federal judge initially denied the tribe's request for a temporary restraining order to stop the operation. Tribal leaders are actively appealing the decision. So we'll have to see how that works out. So, you know, it's always the last word, you know. Mm-hmm. They go against all these horses are on sacred land. Yeah. And on reservations and tribes and because, you know, the Trump administration just took away protections to the animals, they're just being round up and sold off. And I thank you, New York Times, for doing this investigation and finding out that many of these horses are going horrifically to slaughter, sometimes used for human consumption. Yeah. Which I'm sure you've heard about the ground beef. So anyway, we're going to keep following the story about our wild horses. And yes, please, Lori, thank you. Definitely call your representatives, tell them that you want to protect the wild horses in the United States. And we have to just keep fighting the fight.
Thanks, Susan, for that post. We kept it up there a little bit there. Appreciate you. Hey, thank you for Misko for the great first segment and howling with us, and Dr. Stately and Wendy, always a big peeny geegee. Thank you so much. Your fans are calling. I just want to let you know that. And I'm so happy you were able to report this. And we need to stay on top of this and be on top of it. Hey, we'll be right back. back. No, we'll be back tomorrow.
We'll be back tomorrow.
This is Native Roots Radio. Ho! We'll see you all tomorrow. Pinigi again for listening to Native Roots Radio.
The Halusa Nation. We have been called the Indians. We have been called Native American. We have been called hostile. We have been called pagan. We have been called militant. We have been called many names. We are the Halusa.
You are listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI 90.3 FM, Minneapolis, St. Paul, and around the world at kfai.org, non-commercial, community-powered radio.
Oh, it's bursting with ultrasonic.
Gin and tonic, please.
Oh, it's bursting with ultrasonic.